This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the play on the show.
We got a text. It fit right into the what thing do you believe in strongly that's probably wrong. You know it's wrong, but it doesn't stop you from believing in it that adamantly. The Brandon Marshall-like take from the 253. Sean Alexander was a better Seahawks running back than Marshawn Lynch. Lynch had a better single run, but Alexander was a better Seahawk and had a way more dominant season.
Whoa.
That's the kind of take we're talking about. That's exactly the kind of take that we're talking about.
Okay.
So if you have any others, you can submit those, because that'll get some passionate disagreement, but I understand his point. I understand the point being made. It's time for Blue 42. Let's get Michael Bumpus in here.
Here we go.
This is Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, GU corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
Good morning, Bump. How are you now? And I'm sure, Bump, that if you had a very controversial take that people would give you that kind of look, I bet it would involve one Kobe Bryant, perhaps as a GOAT or something like that.
You already know, Paul. My take, Kobe is the greatest basketball player to ever bless the court and save the game of basketball, and to put on a basketball jersey, KB all day.
That's a great way to start this hour off, Bump, and good morning to you. Question one. We heard some interesting comments yesterday from Kerry Hyder during his introductory press conference. He said that he models his game after Michael Bennett.
It did. You know, that's a guy I've looked up to in the league, and a guy I've kind of modeled my game after. So, you know, the characteristics were there, because I kind of – that's who I watch, you know, same body type, that kind of thing. So I just kind of always – that's kind of one of the reasons why I was kind of pitching myself in Seattle. I can kind of see myself in that same type of role as Mike.
I'm really intrigued by what Hyder might bring to the table. He was, of course, very productive in San Francisco last season with 8 sacks. So a question for you, Bump. Is the Seahawks pass rush better than it was last season? You add Kerry Hyder, you lose Jaron Reed, but for the most part, it's the same cast of characters as last year.
Yeah, so you're pretty much talking about two guys being swapped, right? Everyone else is back for the most part. I would say they're better. We're looking at numbers, they're better. Jaron Reed had 6.5 sacks. Kerry Hyder had 8 sacks. The thing that kind of makes you pump your brakes a little bit is that Hyder's coming off a career year. Can he do it again? I think he can. I watch him play. I see some Michael Bennett in him. He's around the same size, 6'2", 270 pounds. Will they move him inside like they did Michael Bennett on passing downs is my question now. Are they going to use him like Michael Bennett? Do the Seahawks see him as Michael Bennett? But when we look at him on paper, they got Mo better. It's like what I tell my kids. Hey, that's Mo better. I think Puna's going to be better. I think we still haven't seen Darryl Taylor. Allen Robinson play good as a rookie. 8.5 sacks for 6.5 sacks. I'll take the swap. The Seahawks line is Mo better.
Mo better. Okay, I'm writing that one down.
I like the addition of Kerry Hyder. I do feel the need to pump the brakes a little bit on the comparisons to Michael Bennett, because, man, Bennett was about as good as we've ever seen at that spot. And it's like, hey, this guy who signed for about the same amount of money, actually it's a little less, is going to come in here and do the thing that the best guy that we've seen, somebody who emerged as one of the most disruptive defensive linemen. It kind of feels to me like the San Francisco 49ers going, well, we're actually going to follow the Patrick Mahomes plan with the number 3 overall pick. It's like, oh, I'm sure you want to. I don't know if that might be setting the bar a little bit high. Michael Bennett might be a little bit high for what would be a very productive signing for Kerry Hyder.
Yeah. Now, you have to admire a guy for looking up to Michael Bennett, because what he did was great. He had a season with 10 sacks, 8.5 sacks. There was a 3 or 4 year run, especially right in the middle of his career, where he was dominant. And as an athlete, you always compare yourself to somebody, right? When I was coming up, I'm like, look, I got to look at Hines Ward. He's the only slot receiver I saw growing up. I'm going to look at Hines Ward, and I want my game to look like his. Can it be Michael Bennett? Again, tall order. We'll see what he does. But I like the confidence. I like that he's comparing himself to someone who's been here. Now it's about this coaching staff. Are they going to use him the same way and let him loose? 8.5 sacks last year. Now he backs it up.
devil's advocate argument in favor of Carry Hyder, because I'm with both of you guys, it's going to be very difficult for him to fill in the shoes of one Michael Bennett. But, okay, he's now 29, going to be turning 30 this coming season, and he's finally going to get into a spot after getting an 8-sack season where he's likely going to be, I would say, a starting player. Maybe he's not, but Michael Bennett at age 27 with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, his first year was a full-time, every single game starter. He had 9 sacks, and then he goes to the Seahawks. But before that, maybe not looked at as a guy that was going to end up being the player that he did become in Seattle. So I'm not expecting it. I think it would be very, very rosy and optimistic to expect more out of Michael Bennett this coming season. But I do think that there are some similarities that could make it a similar experience with Carry Hyder.
Carry Hyder is turning 30, but he was on a practice squad for, 2 years? So he's really 28. We'll give him 28. But I understand your concerns. Once you see that 30 mark on a guy's on the roster, the depth chart or whatever, it makes you start to think a little bit. But he doesn't have the miles, big shoes to fill. I will take another 8.5 sack season from that guy. You get eight. I say you Absolutely. Get 7-8 sacks out of that dude. That's a win.
You get 5 sacks out of him for what you're paying and what you've gotten. That's a win. Question 2. Does Russell Wilson need to rein it in a little when it comes to the ad-libbing and the freestyle? And this question comes from a conversation we had yesterday with Kurt Warner, saying that, hey, the guys who typically take a lot of sacks are typically the guys that are trying to make something happen. And there's a point where you try to do that a little bit too much. Here's Kurt.
You mentioned Patrick Mahomes, that he got away from playing the game on schedule in the Super Bowl. And there was a lot of talk about the offensive line and the pressure, but he was running around a lot of times in that game when I don't know if he needed to run around because he got a little bit impatient or wanted to make the special play instead of just making the layups that were there to be made, and it ultimately hurt them in that game. So you have to find the balance when you're a guy like Russell Wilson or Patrick Mahomes to make the layups but then make the special plays when you can, but you can't live in that world where I expect to make 15 or 20 special plays every game against good teams. It's just not going to happen.
Do you think Russ needs to rein it in, Bump?
I think he does, and he will naturally. I think as you get older, you naturally start to rein it in a bit because physically you just can't do that, but you can't lose who you are. That's part of what makes Russell Wilson special. So I don't think he comes into the season and says, man, I gotta get the ball out a lot faster. I'm holding on to the ball a bit too much. Maybe he has people around him telling him that, but you also have to allow him to be himself. This is Russell Wilson. You got to take the good and the bad. It's like with Brett Favre. You're going to tell Brett Favre, hey, man, no, don't risk it. Don't make those crazy throws. Yeah, you lead the league in interceptions all the time, but this dude also made some crazy throws and won some ball games. So it's a game you play. You want your guy to be responsible, especially your quarterback. But if what made him special, if you want to rein that back, it kind of takes away his personality. It takes away his the connection between him and Tyler Lockett on the scramble. Be cautious with it. Be more careful with the football. But I say, man, if there ain't nothing there and you can move around and buy some time, then you do so. Shane Waldron's offense is going to naturally make him rein it in because he's going to ask for him to get the ball out quicker. The concepts are going to happen so much faster. He's not going to have those opportunities. It's going to happen naturally. Age and offensive scheme is going to make that happen.
I'd imagine, though, given some of the comments that he made about the offensive line this offseason, and somewhat justified, that there are some perhaps trust issues that he has with the offensive line that have been ingrained in him over almost a decade. And I do wonder, Bump, about the idea of turning into the more traditional quarterback as he gets slower and less athletic, if that's something that's going to be an easier transition for him, given that he has seen in so many years the Rams defensive line eat up the interior of the Seahawks offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, experience is everything. As he gets older, he gets all these snaps. He's seen all these defenses. He's watched a bunch of film. Again, if he progresses the way that I think their grades progress, they start to slow down, but they start to find ways to still be effective, to get the ball out, to see a defense. So I think as his abilities go down, I mean, that mental is going to go up. There's nothing like having a veteran quarterback who has won, not just a guy who held a clipboard and who's been a backup quarterback for 12, 13 years, and he comes in and you hope he's going to save the day. Now, Russ has been doing this. So as his abilities go down, I think he will become more of a pocket passer, but he'll always try to get outside the pocket. I don't care if this man is 40 years old. There's going to be times in the game where he's still more mobile than a young guy coming in at 25 who's just a statue in the backfield. It's going to happen. Natural selection is going to happen on its own. It's going to slow down.
Natural selection.
Natural selection.
Love
when
that.
You said that, I just imagine like a smaller quarterback just getting devoured by like a Tyrannosaurus. Like natural selection. You're not fit to survive. Survival of the fittest here on the gridiron.
Imagining like a Mac Jones coming out of the sea, like trying to crawl itself up on the beach like a seal. I don't know. That's a weird image. Okay, question three. Because he's like not that mobile, but he's trying to, you know. Evolve.
I thought it was another joke about his belly. You and Brock.
It was. I mean.
Oh, you're terrible.
My belly isn't. Question three, Bump. Carlos Dunlap was on with us yesterday and had some really interesting comments about Russell Wilson's offseason. Pay attention to one word in particular.
You know, and these are my opinion. You know, he made a mistake. Voiced his words and they were all taken the way that they were taken. I'm not sure if that's how he meant or what he meant, but at the end of the day, I know his heart comes from a good place. He wants to win and he wants to compete at the highest level, and he feels like we have the ability to do so, and he just wants to encourage and, you know, have more support in doing so. It is what it is.
Mistake. What's your reaction to what you just heard from Carlos Dunlap, Bump?
Mistake. I don't think Russ made a mistake. I think that's, I guess, a take that I would say that I have a bunch of swords getting pointed at me by the 12s. Everyone who thinks that Russ shouldn't say anything and he should just be quiet and go out and play football. I'm okay with him talking. I'm okay with him voicing his needs. He's the quarterback. He's the franchise. He's like a coach out there. He's part of the organization. He's more part of this organization than anybody else who puts on the jersey. Therefore, he has special privileges. That's just what it is. He made a mistake. I don't think he made a mistake. But I also think that he's ready to go now. I think that Dunlap is signed. I think that they got Kerry Hyde. I think Gabe Jackson's there now. I think he's looking at the Seahawks organization and say, okay, they're making moves. I'm good for now. But we still got to go out and win. I still got to see what this offensive scheme looks like. I still got to feel like I'm important and can perform. Made a mistake? Nah, I don't think so. I'm okay with my quarterback speaking out and trying to fix things.
I think the one part of it, and this is where it gets confusing to, what if you're saying that the mistake was making it sound like he wanted to play elsewhere? Because there is a point when your agent gives four teams that you would accept a trade to, but you're not asking for a trade. Like, it begins to sound very much like, hey, he doesn't really want to be there. And if that was a mistake, not that he was wrong to say it, but to have the conversation go in that way was a mistake. That it wasn't about him not wanting to be here. And that part of the conversation, he regretted. That's kind of what I feel he was saying, but I'm putting a lot of words in people's mouths there.
You know what? When I was in high school, Kobe tried to leave L.A. He got on the radio, Power 106,
yes.
With
yeah.
Big Boy in the Morning.
Well, called Stephen A. Smith, too.
Yeah, and made it public. Look, I want to leave. All right, what did they do? They made some moves and made things happen. Would I, if me being a Kobe fan, diehard Kobe, my second son's name is Kobe. If Kobe would have left, I wouldn't have been mad at him. I would have just supported wherever he went. I'd still be a Laker, but I'm like, look, that's my favorite athlete. I'm going to show him some love. So this is just the first time the Northwest has dealt with something like this. You know, things like this happen. Superstars are unhappy sometimes. They're going to say some things. And Russell Wilson voiced his opinion. You might not like the way he did it, but the man wasn't lying. He was spitting facts, all facts.
That is Blue 42. We love having Michael Bumpus in with us each and every Friday. It is Bump Day on Wednesdays. It's the mic check on Fridays. We've got some bad news for the Mariners starting pitchers. We started the show talking about this. You suffer two losses in one day, and it's actually the game that they lost probably isn't as severe as the issue that they've suffered with James Paxton having Tommy John surgery recommended for him. But let's not overlook the fact that your top pitcher Marco Gonzalez got touched up for his second straight start. We're kind of scrambling for some rays of sunshine and hope over a pitching staff that over the first week of the season has really taken its lumps.
man, I feel bad for Paxton. He's battled injuries, got that good Tommy John going down. Then Marco's been struggling both starts. It gets you worried. Now, granted, the Mariners, what they've been saying, hey, we're not focused about winning. They're still saying that. But then Marco comes out and says, you know what? I'm not taking that. We're here to win. We're going to do our thing. And then he gets, like you said, touched up. Paxton goes down. It's not looking good for the M's when it comes to guys on the mound. And you got other injuries as well. You got Fraley who strained something. I don't know exactly what happened to me. He has a strained muscle. Hamstring, thank you. It's not looking good, man. It's not looking good. And I feel bad for Paxton because he's battled injuries his whole career. Then he comes back home. It's supposed to be a great homecoming. Just not working out. They got to make some moves. Talk about teams got to make some moves. M's got to do something now.
What's the worst word you can hear as a football player? Because obviously elbow strain for a baseball
Soft.
Player.
Soft. Nobody wants to be called finesse. Do you want to be called even Michael Bumpus? You're a finesse receiver in college. That make you want to fight somebody, right?
Nah, that's always my game. I wasn't gonna go head up with you, nah. But that don't mean I'm soft. What I will do is I will go across the middle and catch the rock. I will stand there in a punt return where there's a herd of lions coming at me and catch the rock. You know, my game was finesse. I wasn't a Brandon Marshall or a big receiver like that, but. Don't call me soft, though. I will go across the middle.
The word I hate is glass. And you see guys like James Paxton, who unfortunately get injured a lot, get called that. And it wasn't a lot of people that did that. But I can't stand it when people go out of their way to call an athlete glass. I feel like some of these guys are playing through unbelievable amounts of pain. And at the same time, too, I mean, it's not their fault that they got injured. And yet that insult almost makes it seem as if it is their fault. You can't control your own genetics. I mean, unless you're just chomping down Boniva with the, you know, those Sally Field commercials back in the day, you know, so that you don't have the osteoporosis or something like that.
The injuries that football players play through week in and week out sit regular people who have office jobs at home down for weeks. And that's no knock on people who do those jobs. I'm just saying, you really don't know. No one is healthy after week one. No one's completely healthy. Maybe the kicker. That's about it. But these guys play through some stuff, man. They're always banged up. So we call somebody glass, yeah, that's disrespectful. They fight through stuff you have no idea. Russell Wilson fought through like a rib injury last year. He had something going on with his hand, but he doesn't talk about it. They just show up and they play, so I would be careful with that.
The question of being injury prone or how tough you are is different from taking a chance and signing an injury prone player. Because with Paxton, when Seattle made the addition, they went into it with their eyes wide open. I agree with their decision to sign him. I think it is a worthwhile risk. But this isn't a surprising outcome. This isn't something that you say like, oh, I never saw that coming. Like even you could make it when Seattle re-signed Sean Alexander, he had never been hurt. He'd played 6 years, he hadn't been hurt at all. And then that after the extension, he ends up breaking a bone in his foot. And there you would say like, hey, that's unforeseen. Rashad Penny came into the NFL with about as clean a health check as you can possibly have as a running back who's played big time college football. But you also can't just not consider signing guys because of who have been injured, because everybody gets injured. It bothers me to see people say, well, what do you expect? It was James Paxton. He was always going to get hurt. And I'm like, that's kind of unfair. Like, that's just to say that this always happens to him is different than saying it was a totally worthwhile signing.
I'm with you. What else this year were you going to do with the $8.5 million? This was, I think, the right move. Now, I am curious to see what they do next offseason if they decide, hey, look, we'll bring you back. Let's see what you can do. We'll just have you on. We'll have you on this team. And if you're 100%, we can try this again next year. And maybe it works out a little bit differently. But I'm with you. And, you know, to make an NFL comparison, bump a guy that played in your town at the same time as you, DeSean Jackson. That's a guy who I think people say the same thing about. But why not roll the dice on a guy who has that kind of talent, even if he might only be available to you for a couple of games? Because those couple of games that he is available to you, I mean, that's a 70-yard touchdown waiting to happen.
That's it right there. You take chances on talent. If it was some regular Joe Schmo, undrafted free agent, Michael Bumpus, who breaks a bone in his foot, you know, you're probably going to cut the dude because he just doesn't bring to the table what this other guy does. And what are you asking for from Paxton, man? If you would have gotten what, just 10 quality starts out of him, and they kind of get this thing rolling, and he helps guys like Justin Dunn kind of develop and not have all this pressure on him. Yeah, that's a win. So you always roll the dice on talent, man, especially if they're not too old. If they're still in a sweet spot to where you can get a few years out of them, I think you take the chance.
You also, when you say roll the dice, that's exactly how we should compare it, because it's the moment before you release the dice that you have to decide whether the decision was a good one or not if you're a GM. GM doesn't get the benefit of seeing how things turn out and saying, well, okay, you're only going to have him for 24 pitches. He's going to be hurt. Everybody would be like, well, I'm not signing him then. It's what – did the risk make sense at the time you took it? And with James Paxton, my answer is yes. Yes, it did. It absolutely made sense. Now, as it has not panned out, it leaves them in a tougher situation. And all of a sudden, there's a lot more emphasis that's placed. If James Paxton was healthy, I wouldn't be as concerned about Marco Gonzalez's first two starts as I am. If James Paxton had looked Same. Good in that first, because you would be like, hey, yeah, it's not going well, but you've got a guy like James Paxton has the stuff to be at the top of a rotation. And if he stays healthy, he's able to do that. Well, now you don't have Paxton. And the guy who's been your most productive, most reliable, most consistent pitcher has been touched up in both of his first outings. He's given up a home run every two innings. One home run every two innings. That's not sustainable. He's given up an average of two base runners at least per inning. That's not sustainable as a starting pitcher. And you ran out of other options for guys to carry the workload, because not only is Marco struggling and scuffling so far, but James Paxton's not available. You need Pax, or you need Marco to find his way right.
Depth, and you lost that. You lost a guy that you were going to count on to get things going, to help Marco. But you're right. You got your ace who's struggling, then your number two who goes down. There is cause for concern. Young guys got to step up. But that's the theme of the Mariners anyway, right? Young guys got to step up. We'll see who does.
It's Danny and Gallant. We got Michael Bumpus in for us. The rest of this hour should be fun conversation because, man, it sure sounds like the drama with Russell Wilson is over. Are we ready to put a period at the end of that sentence? We'll tell you next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
I'm looking right now at the official draft hats that they'll pull on guys' domes when they get up there to be introduced as the pick. But why are we going with meshbacks? How do we feel about the trucker cap in colloquial terms? That is the official draft hat. I know I'm old. I know I'm old. But man, the trucker hat was always the cheap alternative. The trucker hat was always the thing that you'd see, and it had styrofoam and potentially like off-putting weird slogans on the front that you buy at the gas station. Why are we giving those out to kids that are being minted millionaires at the draft?
Maybe it's in. I don't know. We're old, right? I don't keep up with what's in. I just know what I like. And I know that I don't like the trucker hat. I wouldn't wear it. I know snapbacks. I remember when I was young, you couldn't wear snapbacks. Like, people would talk crap to you for wearing snapbacks. Now, All I wear are snapbacks. You know what I mean? So maybe it's in. Maybe we missed the window, and this is for the young folk.
It's still weird to me seeing hats when I buy them and they're flat-brimmed, and I'm like, well, I'm going to have to curve this. And it's really difficult to curve some of these things because they are basically like hard-line, just cemented into being flat-brimmed. And then they'll like return into being flat-brimmed before. So, yeah, I think we're all starting to lose it when it comes to that side of things.
Yeah, it's possible we're not young and cool anymore. We played the sound from Carlos Dunlap talking about the understanding he had, or talking to Russell Wilson that, hey, Russ is going to be there. If he's going to make any sort of move, it's into ownership. Like, it's not going to be – this isn't going to be a Tom Brady situation. We also heard from Brandon Marshall a couple days ago, who said he was going to announce news and that the conversation was over. It sounds to me that this issue has been put to rest, and probably from conversations behind the scenes with Russell Wilson, talking to teammates and other guys in the media. Where do you guys think things stand right now with Russ and the Seahawks?
It's done. It's over with. it was over with a long time ago, honestly. It was just gave us something to talk about. Russ was never going to go anywhere. The Bears would have to make an incredible deal, which they weren't capable of doing. It was just a bunch of commotion during the offseason. Now it's time to focus. You got the draft coming up. You've major. You're moving on O-line, D-line. You're bringing guys back. You just extended Tyler Lockett. It's time to focus now. All that I'm not happy and stuff needs to go. Even if he weren't happy at this point in the game, it's time to suck it up, Buttercup, and get ready to go to work. You've thrown your tantrum. You've made it be known that you need things. You want things to be done. All right, now let's clock in. Let's go down to San Diego, invite your receivers. You got Gerald Everett you got to build a relationship with. Now you're focusing on the football team. It's a wrap.
It's important to note that we're speculating here, but Bump, I'm curious as to what you think about what Russ's move was perhaps privately behind the scenes between initial comments and where we're at now. Do you think that he has spoken with his teammates and, you know, going back to those Carlos Dunlap comments, maybe characterized the way that things got out of hand as a mistake? I'm really wondering what those conversations were like, because they're probably a tad awkward for Russell Wilson to bring them up if he did feel the need to bring them up.
He's definitely spoken to teammates. He's spoken to Dunlap, obviously. He's spoken to Dwayne Brown. He's spoken to Bobby Wagner, KJ, all the big hitters out there, all the leaders of position groups, especially on offense, but of course the defense. I think he spoke to Jamal too. He's done it. And I want to believe they've had candid conversation. That's the thing. Russell ain't giving them the answers in the conversation he gives us. They might get in depth. They might talk about what he really meant, how he really felt, what he would have done differently. But he has had conversations, and I feel like he's had to patch up a couple relationships. I wouldn't say patch up relationships, but just smooth things out. Because a guy like Dwayne Brown, we start talking about that offensive line, I feel like he's a guy who's going to get offended and say, look, you can't talk about us like that. Or what exactly did you mean, Russ? Let's elaborate on this, and let's get on the same page. But at this point, what else are you going to do? You're going to talk about your quarterback? You're going to throw a fit and say, well, Russ, you should have did this? No, he has a privilege. He's the QB. Smooth it out. Let's get to work. I think that's what they're doing.
Here's my question, and we're not going to know the answer to this probably for a year. We're going to table this because, as you said, like this, the time for the airing of grievances has ended. It's time to suck it up, Buttercup, and everybody's going to go to work and make. Has there been a resolution that's been achieved? And this is a question about not between Russ and his teammates. It's really about Russ's attitude toward the team. Is this like Kobe in 2007, where he basically went and stood outside his place of employment, employee number 8, saying, hey, what are you guys doing here? And then after that was on board. And Pau Gasol came in not too long after that, and they improved the roster. Or is this going to be that, hey, a year from now, Russ is going to feel like, I told you guys last offseason and nothing really changed and we're in the same spot we were, and what are we going to do? And that the feelings that he expressed this time around are even more entrenched next time around. I don't have a feel for which one of those this is. I don't. Whether this is, it's very clear that there is an attempt to turn down the temperature on this what was it, a boil over Russell's future in Seattle. Hey, we're not going to talk. But I don't get the sense, has there been something resolved, or has it just been put on the back burner?
Both. It's been resolved. Gabe Jackson's here, offensive line protection, right? Got your left guard. Extended Tyler Lockett. Okay, you're keeping my boy here, my scramble machine, my homie. We all got a good connection. Bring Dunlap back. Boom. All right. Now he's sitting back and saying, all right, this better work now. We got Shannon here too. We got a tight. All right, this better work. If this doesn't work, man, you're going to hear me in February. You're going to hear me in March. It's a year-by-year situation at this point. It better work.
The worst part about that is that this situation would be, I would imagine, even going into next year, say they have the same result that they've had the last 6 years, better than all of them. And we'll go through this cycle again, and all the pieces that are important come back, blah, 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 blah. And I'm going to probably put my face through drywall or something like that in frustration.
No, but this is kind of how it works, right? Is that the employee gets to state what they want. They don't really have any control over what the team does. They try to influence as best they can. Then they go to work and put their hard hat on and clock in and clock out and do the best that they can to make the most of it. And then when they get to the end of the next season, they decide, like, do I trust the guys that are calling the shots? Do I trust the suits upstairs? And that's based on they do need to get further in the playoffs. They do need to show more progress, racking up more regular season wins. They need to have a point where they break through and become a legit Super Bowl contender. It looked like they did for the first 8 games of the season, and it turned out that they weren't. It turned out pretty clearly that they weren't when they lost at home in a playoff game to a team that was starting a backup quarterback. And by the way, their best player didn't play for about half the game because Aaron Donald was out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. Oh, that's the worst part about the whole thing, isn't it? I mean, you have that offensive line, which was struggling, and yet they weren't even able to get it done against non-Aaron Donalds.
It's Danny and Gallant. We've got Michael Bumpus, who is here with us for one more segment. What's one Seahawks opinion you have that gets people mad? We've heard one from the 253, which is that Sean Alexander was a better Seahawk than Marshawn Lynch. That Lynch had a better run, but Alexander had more productive overall career. What's one Seahawk opinion you have that would evoke a similar reaction? That's next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
I saw this meme yesterday. Michael Bumpus hanging out with us for 15 more minutes before doing double duty later this afternoon on the Jake and Stacey program. It's a picture of a dude who's smugly just sitting down, and there's a bunch of swords pointed at him. And the question that I had is, what Seahawks opinion of yours gets you this reaction where the knives come out and everyone comes after you? And there's a conversation taking place right now because of a text, Danny, that we got that has to do with Sean Alexander. So Danny and Bob, you guys have been here longer than me. Sean Alexander, to me, is the guy who was on the cover of Madden 2007 and is one of the best running backs that was in the NFL over the past decade, like in the 2000s. And yet, it seems like he is not well-liked here. And that is very strange to me, given that he was a part of the Seahawks' first surge to relevance.
Yeah. I would argue, my two Seahawks takes in this would be, Jermaine Kearse has endured more criticism than anyone ever should. He's the most underrated player. And I don't get it. The second one would be that Sean Alexander, somehow the only MVP in Seahawks history, is criminally underrated. He's not popular. And not only that, there are people who believe that he was an underachiever, which when you go back and look at the stats he racked up.
His numbers are insane.
Yeah. But there are people who will say, look, it'll happen right now. If you said Sean Alexander was a more productive running back for the Seahawks than Marshawn Lynch. Again, that's factually impeccable. Like, that is definitively true. Watch what'll happen. People will flip out. 710, 710, get mad. Write your letters in crayons. Like, storm the castle. Talk to me about Hutch. All these other things that'll come up.
I think it's how it ended with Sean Alexander. It was almost like after the MVP, he stopped. He was, like, shying away from contact. I remember seeing him go down. I'm like, why is he going down? Like, you're a running back. Like, get these extra yards. It was just his style of play. You talk about a finesse. He wasn't a real power guy. He looked like a power guy. You see those elbow pads and the shoulder pads. You think, okay, he's going to run through a guy. He wasn't a power type of guy. So I think after the MVP and all that, he started getting out of bounds, and people just didn't like it. That's why they love Marshawn. You think of running back, people automatically think of Marshawn Lynch's style of play. I think if Sean Alexander played in today's game, then maybe it wouldn't have gone sour like it did.
That's such an interesting point about the aesthetics bump, because you're exactly right. You have all those elbow pads on. Maybe you are expected to be more physical than you actually are as a running back. And I'm not 100% sure in 2006 after that MVP season. He only played in 10 games, so I'm assuming that there was some injury along the way.
Broken
there.
Bone in his foot.
Okay.
Broken bone in his foot, which he also proclaimed that he had preyed on, and that had resulted in it being healed, and he expected to come back after missing a week, and then they took more tests, and they're like, no, we think it's still cracked. Like, there was a whole ordeal about how long he was out for that as well.
Ah, okay. There is a noticeable statistical drop from the MVP season on, and maybe that's what it's all about.
It existed before that.
Wow.
It really did. It existed. the point where it started was at the end of the 2004 season, and he finished 1 yard short of the rushing title, and they won a game against the Falcons to clinch a playoff berth. This is the end of the 2004 season, to clinch the division. And afterwards, Sean said that he had been stabbed in the back because they were at the 1 yard line, and Matt Hasselbeck snuck the ball in and scored a touchdown. And he said, we were at the freaking goal line. Like, I feel like I was stabbed in the back because I didn't get to rush that yard. He was complaining about the way Seattle scored the clinching touchdown of a game in which they needed to win to make the playoffs. It looked bad.
Oh, man. Like,
it looked really bad.
And the irony of that comment with, of course, Marshawn Lynch being rather silent about not getting the handoff in an actual Super Bowl.
You lost.
Right. That context is something else. Man, stabbed in the back over statistics. That is a giant yikes.
Here's the thing, though. Every player cares about statistics. I don't care what they say.
Oh, no doubt.
It's all about the team. Nah, homie, you want that extra 100 yards. There's incentives in your contract. Let's be 100 about it. So he just said the truth. He told the truth. He said what people didn't want to hear, and it rubbed them the wrong way because they want people to say, I'll die for this team. I'll do anything for this team. End of the day, you're going to make sure you get your stats so you get your money.
That is, Bump, you're invaluable because you're willing to shoot. You're right. You're right. Everybody would have felt some sort of way. Like, Marshawn definitely feels a way about not getting the ball in that situation. He just doesn't say it out loud like Sean did after the game. And the Seahawks won the game, which makes it look a little worse.
Yeah.
Because he's complaining about the way that they won it because it didn't go through him. He was also, in covering Sean, there's a slightly delusional element of his personality. And I'll give you an example. ESPN, the magazine, was doing a cover story on him, and he suggested to the writer that the way to set up the photo shoot for the cover was to have his five offensive linemen dressed up as Christmas elves and to have Sean seated behind them, perhaps in a Santa suit, saying, all I want for Christmas, as he's holding the MVP trophy and the Lombardi. And if anybody knew those offensive linemen, like, the idea of getting Robbie Toback or Steve Hutchinson to wear an elf costume while he's sitting behind them, like, there's no way. Like, and that's what I mean just by that. It's not malicious. It was just like he saw things a little bit differently, and that wasn't a way that always resonated with his teammates or with the fans.
It's a little different.
All that said, when people say that he underachieved, I was like, he must have been the best running back ever created by God then. If he was able to rack up those statistics while underachieving, like, if he was able to do that while, like, he must have been, seriously, like, that guy was Jim Brown times O.J. Simpson. If he was able to do, to underachieve and rack up the numbers, it's like six straight years where he has 1,200 yards or more rushing. It's an unbelievable statistical haul that he had. So that's why I would say he is underrated. I know why he's underrated, and it has to do with how he resonated with fans, but he is underrated. There's no doubt about that.
Personality takes you a long way. And his personality, I think people just didn't really connect with him. There are some people who did and who love him and all that, but then there are the people who like Marshawn Lynch, who like that personality more than that. It's marketability, man. That's all part of it. Your personality affects your jersey sales, how people think of you. They think you're washed up. The dude was the best running back that the Hawks had seen at that time. So I think it's a mix of a bunch of things with Sean Alexander, but there's no denying the dude was a baller. He was a baller.
From both of you, what would be the quickest way for me to get a proper appropriation of Sean Alexander's time with Seattle, both the good and the bad? Is there a way that I could find that in a nutshell sort of version where I can understand where people are coming from with the also understanding that this guy was unbelievably productive?
I think you have to look at his highlights, right? Look at the great runs. You see him busting off 30, 40-yard runs. And then you look at the runs that weren't so great. And then you look at an interview. And I think from those three things, you could form your own opinion of what and who you think Sean Alexander is, because no one's going to have the same view of this dude. He's an interesting guy. He really is an interesting guy.
Yes, he is. I would advise you to talk to two people. Talk to Dave Wyman and then talk to Paul Moyer.
Okay.
Talk to Wyman and talk to Moyer because they give you two very different perspectives on who he was. And Paul Moyer maybe has the best assessment of Sean Alexander, which is don't criticize him for who he's not. Don't hold it against him the kind of player he wasn't, because there were some limitations in his game. And if you stop asking him to do those things and just appreciate what he was, you probably have a better sense of how incredibly productive he was as a player, instead of wondering about all those times he went out of bounds.
What a fascinating player.
it's hilarious, man. He did. He had this drip, drip, gush style where he'd be like 1 yard, 1 yard. Goes down at contact, and then, oh, he ripped off a 37-yard run. He had tremendous vision. And before 2006, up until 2006, he had really good burst.
Michael Bumpus, you've had tremendous takes today, and we're going to hear more of that later on this afternoon. Some double-duty action. How about that? Jake and Stacy, you're stubbing in.
Subbing in for the guru. It's warming up my arm. It's warming it up.
He is an ex-quarterback, after all. Thank you very much, Bump, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
The one and only Michael Bumpus. It's Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle. So a lot of things to dive into. I'm curious as to other unpopular Seahawks opinions that y'all might have, because, of course, the Sean Alexander one is definitely an interesting one, but I'm sure there are others. We've also got some sad Mariners news to talk about, I suppose. Surprise, surprise. It's Danny and Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle.